Well, welcome to another episode of Scientology Fear Game. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Lee. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. We have another special guest with us today.
Oh, yes,
another,
we do.
Another one of our faves.
Yes, she is.
Hello, Valeska.
Hi, Leah.
Welcome to the show. We really appreciate you being on.
Thank you. I'm really happy to talk to you and Mike.
Valeska, you were raised a Scientologist. Your parents were Scientologists, and you were sent into the Sea Org, or what they call the Cadet Org, when you were how old?
6 years old. I was, yeah, my parents got divorced, and my dad went to the Sea Org and took all of us kids with him.
What happened? You know, they got divorced. And why did they get divorced? Did they get divorced because he wanted to join the Sea Org?
No, they got divorced because they were having problems. My dad was like a struggling artist, and my mom was a nurse, and like her last pregnancy was really bad. It was twins, and one of them died, so she was in hospital for like 3 months straight, and she was the one that made all the money. So it was a struggle. So they sent a Scientologist to resolve their marriage, which was a millionaire guy, and he fell in love with my mom and had an affair with her. That was the handling.
So let's go back. So you can tell that story. So Valeska, you were raised a Scientologist, and at 6 years old, your parents were getting divorced, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And so why don't you take us from there?
Okay, so my parents were struggling in their marriage, so a Scientologist was sent to help resolve it.
Okay.
And it was this Swiss guy who was a self-made millionaire, and he fell in love with my mom, and they had an affair.
So Scientology sends a Scientologist to solve your parents' marriage, and the Scientologist seduces your mother and has an affair with her.
Yes. Yeah.
Gotcha.
He was like sending her love letters and stuff, and he was very charismatic and very successful. So yeah. So they had an affair, and then actually I kind of exposed it when I was six, because they were always together, and I told my dad, and it blew up, and then they got divorced, and basically we were told by my dad that we were going to England with him to the Cadet Org. And I remember this so vividly because it was so traumatizing. But my mum took us to England with my dad, and we were at St. Hill, and there was this like old blue bus there, and she was with two Sea Org members in grey standing next to her, and she was crying, and she's like, I'll be right back. I'm just going to the canteen to get hot chocolate. And we were put on the back of the bus, and it just drove off. And that's the last time I saw her for like I think it was like 6 months until she came and visited us for like a day.
So I just want to be, I just want to be clear, because a lot of us ex cult members still talk in cultese and cultology.
Oh,
it's okay. So basically you guys were shipped off to join Scientology Sea Organization, which is the, hey Mike, how would you explain what the Sea Org is? It's a, because people ask us, why do they wear uniforms, and what's the connection to the military uniform thing? And why is that? Why did L. Ron Hubbard come up with this pretended military look and theme? Because everything is run semi like the military, where you're saluting people and calling people sir, and they have all the epaulets and the, what is that stuff that you put on your jacket when you're an officer and all that stuff? What are those called, Mike?
The campaign ribbons?
Yeah. Like what? Yeah. So where did all of that come from? Because they're impersonating the military.
Go ahead. That came from Hubbard being in the Navy in World War II. And then subsequently, when he was being pursued by various governments, most particularly he was living in England and he wanted to escape them, he bought a boat and then went to sea in the Mediterranean on his boat and took with him a number of Scientologists from England who were the dedicated, most dedicated members of Scientology, to go and live and work with L. Ron Hubbard aboard his ship. And that was the beginning of what became known as the Sea Organization. And because they were on a ship, they wore naval-style uniforms, and Hubbard fancied himself as a highly successful naval officer and implemented basically naval terminology and routines to the Sea Organization, as he called it. And the Sea Organization to this day has maintained a lot of those traditions, including the fact that those people who went to join him committed themselves for eternity to establishing the goals and aims of Scientology, and that became the infamous billion-year contract that people who joined the Sea Org sign.
Right. And so they basically, it's just kind of a, I mean, obviously they're not going to be there for a billion years, but the motto of the Sea Org, if you look up the little symbol on Wikipedia, even, it says that it stands for "We Come Back." And so L. Ron Hubbard has brainwashed all of its members, parishioners, and Sea Org representatives, believing that when you die, you'll take a 21-year leave of absence and then return back to the job of the Sea Organization or being a Scientologist again.
Correct.
Okay.
And you know, there's even more to this. The symbology is taken from the Galactic Confederation, and the members of the Sea Organization are the current version of the loyal officers from OT3 who vanquished Xenu. And it's like, it goes on and on and on. But the Sea Org is those people in Scientology who live and work full-time, 365 days a year, all day and every day, live communally, eat communally, and work for the good of Scientology for no money.
Right.
There you
so
go.
At age six, thank you, Mike. So at age six, you were put on this bus at St. Hill, which is in England, and shipped off to the Sea Org.
Yes. So we went from St. Hill to Stonehenge, which was the birthing, and it was this huge old, I don't know, like mansion building, but it was completely run down when I got there. I spoke no English. And I remember going up these old stony stairs and down this like 3 kilometer drive full of holes and going to the dining room. And it was just a whole bunch of people going. And then we got to the dining room and it was this like all these white tables lined up and there was a huge hole in the ceiling, water all over the floor. And it was cold. It was England. And lining up and eating this food, which to me was completely inedible. And then they didn't have enough room, so we were all put, me, my sister, my brother, and my dad, in a single bed that smelt like pee. The whole house smelt like pee and bleach. There's even a report on it when there was an inspection done. And I missed my mum so much. I was a mama's girl, and I didn't know where she was. I was so confused. So I was throwing up all night. And then the next day, my dad started the EPF and we were put in the cadet org. And that was my first experience of no emotions because our nanny was French and I was crying and she was like, knock it off. Like, that's not okay. Stop dramatizing. And she put me to work.
You should feel emotional. So you were put to work at age six.
Yeah.
To be in this cadet org, which is not officially the Sea Org yet, but it's kind of like the, at this time, because also, Mike, people get confused about kids in the Sea Org. At this time, they were allowing children in the Sea Org in this manner. They still allow children in the Sea Org. You're just not allowed to have children while you are Sea Org members. Does that make it clearer, or am I confusing everybody, Mike, do you think?
No, I think that's clear. I mean, back in the old days, children could be born to members of the Sea Org. That's no longer allowed. But children who allowed. Have parental consent now are allowed to join the Sea Org as long as they're over the age of 10 or something. I don't even know what it is.
But right.
In the old days, like when my kids were born, they were born into the Sea Org.
Right.
And when Valeska was six, she was along with, she came into the Sea Org, but there were children there who were children of Sea Org members who had been born in the Sea Org.
Right. And just to also let everybody know, when you say nanny, I think you're being kind.
No normal person would find this an acceptable setup, that these people who are assigned responsibility for looking after the children have absolutely no skills or qualifications to do so. In fact, in the Sea Org, generally, the nanny, quote unquote, that's what they're called because Hubbard wrote a flag, an issue that says this is what the nanny's job is.
Right.
The nanny is usually someone that can be is an expendable, is someone that can't do other normal jobs. Right. So gets put to looking and watching the kids.
Could you imagine?
This is just how things are in the Sea Org. The menial tasks, the unimportant stuff is the stuff that people who are incapable of making money or being a Scientology, you know, executive or counselor or something, they get assigned to doing those sort of jobs.
Right.
It's a degrading job. It's like, for example, it is considered a degrading job. For example, there was a guy who was, when I was like 10, there was a guy who was a peeping Tom, and he kept on looking at women showering and he wouldn't stop. So he was going to be sent to the RPF. And then they're like, oh, okay, we'll give you one last chance. You can look after the kids. So he became our nanny, quote unquote, and he ended up installing cameras in our dorms and getting off on watching us changed.
Right. So this is normal practice in Scientology. I wish I can say that this is how they look at children. They don't look at the most important job would be to put the most trusted, the most able, the most valuable members of Scientology in charge of our children. This is not abnormal, and nothing has changed, and nothing will change if we don't continue to get these types of stories out. And Valeska, even if you were asked, because people say, how come people are not talking about it? Well, Scientology children currently do not understand that this is illegal, that they are being abused, that their parents could be charged with neglect by putting their children in these, in the Sea Org and in these types of situations. So the people who need to speak out currently, as opposed to us, you, Valeska, and those who continue to speak and tell their stories, are the ones telling the stories. But this is not in the past. It's happening today, and it will continue if we don't continue. So here you are in the Sea Org, in the Cadet Org at age 6, and you're working. Right? You're working as any other child would be working in the Sea Org. What are you doing? What kind of tasks do you have to do in the Cadet Org?
So we did all the cleaning of this big... Have you been to Stoneman's, Mike?
Oh, I was in the EPF there too, Valeska.
Now, the EPF stands there for state... Let me just tell everybody, because you guys are saying RPF and EPF and nobody knows what you're talking about. The EPF is like the beginning training camp to be a Sea Org member. The RPF is when you molest a child or rape somebody, they put you on the decks. So, you know, it's basically the same thing.
It's like prison.
Well, I wouldn't say it's like prison because it isn't.
But it's Valeska. Worse because...
No, Valeska, worse. Valeska, a real prison is a real prison. The RPF is not enough punishment for somebody who molests a child or who rapes somebody, right? You're still living a free life. Right. Yes. So you're still living a free life. You're not in a real prison. You might be in Scientology prison, but you're still free. You're cleaning. You're doing things. You're, you know, as a free, somewhat free person, you're not in jail where you should be.
And you're not registered. No one knows. Like,
correct.
You know, people like that, it's known about.
So, Valeska, at 6 years old, you're put into this Cadet Org organization. Mm-hmm. And what are you kids doing every day? What is it that you have to do in the Cadet Org to train yourselves to be stellar Sea Org members?
Okay, so I have to tell you this. One of the first things that happened is I was 6 years old and I was sat down and I was made to sign a Sea Org contract, a billion-year Sea Org contract, because a statistic, right? They wanted us to all be future Sea Org members. So
okay.
There was no choice in the matter. It was like, sure, read this and sign it.
Of course.
Read we this were and run. Sign it
at 6 years old. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
We were run like the Navy. So we were like, we had to stand in line and so they could control where we were. Because there was, at that time, there was so many children and hardly any people looking after us and any quote unquote nannies.
Right.
And then we were put to work to clean the whole house. We used pure bleach to clean everything. So like our hands would get like really dry and crack, and you'd have this smell of bleach up your nose constantly.
So you had no protective gear.
No protective gear. We and it was like those big bottles of pure bleach. It didn't even have anything else in it.
Right.
We cleaned the bathrooms. We'd clean the grounds, de-weed. There was like this old swimming pool there that was always full of like broken beds, frogs, glass, and we'd go in there barefooted and have to take out the glass with our hands and empty it all out. And yeah, and then we had to study Hubbard like 2.5 hours a day in the evening.
So on top of the labor that they were forcing you children to do, they would force you to then study at night. And so you mm-hmm. kids were working from 8 a.m. till what?
6. We had dinner for half an hour and then so we'd go to study.
You'd go to study till 9 o'clock at night, six-year-olds. Okay, and you did this for how long?
Well, then I started like going to Scientology school, so I'd do that in a day and then we'd work after. But I did that till I was 14. Another thing that happened, which...
You did this till you were 14 years old?
Yes.
Okay.
And there was times like another thing that happened is I missed my mom so much and I was so miserable. And I remember I was trying to get attention, so I would purposely like hurt myself to get attention. But I got yelled at for that because that was, you know, I got really yelled at for doing that.
Because you miss your mom.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And where was your father throughout all this? Was your father parenting you? Who was?
No.
No.
He was in the Sea Org. He lived, like, we lived in dorms with, there was probably about 50 girls. There was also babies there. We had to look after the babies. So I was changing nappies and looking after babies at the age of 6. My dad, at the beginning we had family time for an hour, but my dad missed my mum and he would just sleep. And I remember I would clean his room to try and make him feel better about it. But, and then that was canceled. Another thing is that I would do headstands on my bed and I was on a top bunk because we had bunks, like just to rebel somehow and to somehow have some control. So I'd get pulled out of bed and I had to wash pots every night, huge pots at 6 years old, which actually put my back out and I ended up having one shoulder a bit higher than the other, which got fixed years later because every night I was washing these big pots with the RPF until about 10:30, 11 at night. That went on for probably about a month because I kept on doing the headstands on my bed. I don't know. I was trying to have some control.
Right. Now, Valeska, at any point did the Sea Org people ever tell you if the authorities come or anybody comes, Child Protective Services come, and this is what you have to say? Because this is, if anybody walked in and seen children working like this, using, you know, working with bleach, living on their own, taking care of a 6-year-old, taking care of babies is insane. Did you ever get trained on how to speak to people? Should they ever come to the base and talk to you? What did they say that you should say to the authorities?
So, first we had like, we also were put on the meter once a week to make sure we didn't do anything wrong, which was so scary for me because someone would be like watching this needle and you didn't know what it meant. Like, and so then sometimes we'd have to write, like we had to do like the conditions where if you did something wrong, you were disciplined or...
Well, who taught you what to say to the authorities and what did they tell you to say?
So from the age of 6, we were made, like when I was there, I was made to believe that police were bad, authorities was bad, government was bad, lawyers were bad, like any of these people were really bad people, and that you always put Scientology first. Right. Like you cannot, like, you have to, it's called like a white lie or acceptable truth. So you have to.
An acceptable truth. Yeah, we've all learned this, by the way. Go ahead.
Yeah. And then actually, there was a time where, like when I was about 10 to 12, where we were rebelling a little bit. And I picked up the phone and I was like, I'm calling child services, because the cook like beat me up with a mop in my face. And so I was like, I'm calling child services. So the nanny came and ripped the phone out of the wall. And then I had to do like disciplinary actions and do all this extra work for having done that. And
write down. Punished. You were punished. I was punished. So you had to like write down your sins for this.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So you learned basically don't report, don't say anything. And this is basically the indoctrination to any Scientologist, whether or not they're in the Sea Org or not. I mean, all of us learned this, that you, anything that happens within Scientology is your fault anyway.
Yes.
And if it is the other person's fault, if the other person is at fault, they'll handle it within Scientology. And
but even if the other,
go ahead.
Even if the other person is at fault, like if someone came and punched me in the face, like, and they got in trouble internally for doing that, I would also have to look at what did I do, they call pull
to
it
have
in.
That, so to have that happen to you.
What did I do wrong for that to happen to me? And that was my mentality from, I mean, I was born in Scientology, but it was really pushed when I went to the cadet org. So that's how I fought my whole life. And I still have to stop myself. I still think if anything happens to me that's bad, I'm still always internalizing, like, what did I do, like, to make that happen to me?
Of course. It doesn't just happen overnight, you know, to change what you were raised with. Because this is your, ultimately, these are your parents raising you. So, you know, Scientology is your parent. And even though you know what your parent is doing is wrong, it's still your parent. You're still hoping your abuser will be your comfort.
Yes,
as well.
Which they were not. They hated us.
Yeah, I don't think that we can ever stress enough, Leah, this concept that is hammered and hammered and hammered in Scientology, that you are responsible for your condition, that whatever happens to you, something bad, it's because you did something bad, and the solution is to find out what you did that caused that to happen to you, because it is probably the most damaging single thing that happens in Scientology, is that people come to believe this is absolutely true. So therefore, anything bad that ever happens to them in Scientology is their fault.
Correct. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And on top of it, you know I've talked to you, Mike, about this, and I've also, you know, texted Valeska, and I'm texting everybody, emailing everybody, telling everybody about this book, The Betrayal Bond, which if you have, if you're interested in your own mental health, whether you are in a cult or not, The Betrayal Bond is a book that talks about why people stay, why people don't speak out, why it takes so long for people to leave, why did you still believe in this relationship? Why did you still believe in your abuser? This book goes over all of this. And I just wish, Mike, that I'm going to start pulling out just, you know, pages, because, you know, I'm asked the same question all the time, as well you, as well anybody who's leaving Scientology or even an abusive relationship. Why did you still believe in them? But on top of this, Mike, it goes over certain things like, you know, traumas in your life, right? Like, things like, you know, abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, right? But then it says, now, if you had this, and then you've had, if you were betrayed by your religion, if you were betrayed by your parents, and I'm like, check, 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 check. And it says, if you've had one of these, you need to do some trauma work with a trauma specialist, because a lot of people go to therapy and they go, this is not helping me. Because you have to go to people who do trauma work. And it's so important to understand this as a concept, because all of us need to be understanding the same thing so that we are telling the world why people are staying in these things, why it took me 6 years to leave, right? Why it took Mike you so long to leave, why it took Valeska so long to leave. It makes sense when you read this book and you understand what happens when you have a betrayal bond with your abuser. That's how it gets created. That bond is created.
Right.
From the betrayal.
Yeah. And Christy and I are listening to it on our daily walk.
Oh, good.
The entire neighborhood is hearing this, Leah. I am disseminating this book to our entire neighborhood as we walk around each day listening to it.
And Mike, have you had any thoughts about it as you're listening to the beginning? I mean, I don't know if you're far enough yet in, but it is like, I mean, I've had to put it down. And Valerie, you know, Valerie, my assistant, she's had to put it down. It's not an easy, it's not easy work to do.
Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right. And there are so many things within it that are, you go, oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
It really is very, very interesting and brings up a lot of things that you don't necessarily think of as
trauma.
This is, yes, exactly.
Yes.
And examples of it and how it affects people and affects people forever.
Forever, unless they do the work. Right? And that's the thing. There is hope, right? If you've been in an abusive relationship, there is hope. You just have to be doing the right work. And I've talked to people who said, I'm in therapy. I'm still, you know, I'm like, well, you got to be getting the right therapy. And I know it's a pain in the ass to try somebody else and to get on, just get on the right track. But we, you know, but Valeska, this all makes sense to me, right? It's thinking in terms of you are a victim of your parents in this case. I mean, from age six, from the moment it makes you cry when you're talking about getting on the bus. I mean, that is a trauma experience that for any child to be ripped from their mother. And then everything that happened after that is very valid, Valeska. It's just that we're not used to thinking in terms of being a victim, because that's the worst thing you can be in Scientology. And I think you're still, working with that concept that you try to just say, I'm not a victim, I'm moving on.
I was going to.
Yeah, I know.
When you said that word, I'm like, no, I'm not, I wasn't a victim.
But Valeska,
I was six.
Yes, yeah. You were six, exactly. And things that happened after were just as bad. So sorry to go on, but so Valeska, so at this point, so you lived this horrible, abused life until 14, where you then what? Joined the official Sea Org?
Yeah, so I'll have to, I just want to tell you one thing that I thought was important.
Sure.
In the cadet org in England, like, some kids went to Scientology school in a day like me, and then others to a non-Scientology school. And if we got sick, so the people that, the quote-unquote nannies, I don't know how else to say it, they would go into St. Hill. So if, for example, from the age of six, if I got sick, and about once a year I would get this illness where I would just throw up and throw up and throw up, and it was usually for 4 days, I was left at Stoneland's alone. Oh, that's where we lived. That was the Sea Org birthing.
So you were just left to just throw up by yourself?
All day, from the age of six.
Okay.
No food, no doctors. Nothing. And that's how it was for all of us. Or like one time I took too much niacin and I was like really, really sick. Same thing. No doctors. We never were taken to doctors. Nothing. Just left there. And like, I just think of that because if my kids are sick now, like, I didn't realize it was wrong. Like, that's just how I,
that's what I was used to. That's how you're raised. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but now after I had my own kids, I was like, I'm horrified that that would happen. Like,
well, that's just because you're a parent, but right. So
yeah.
So at the age of 14, you went to Florida.
So my mum was a Scientologist with her millionaire husband in Florida, and we would go see her sometimes in summer for like 6 weeks, which was almost worse because we had a normal life for 6 weeks and then it got ripped away from us again.
And did you ever tell you, and your mother never asked you, you know, what are you guys doing over there? This was a totally acceptable life to your mom, that her kids are being abused all day, every day for.
Well, she went there and she saw the conditions. So I have to say yes.
Yes.
And
so she was okay with it.
She was doing her Scientology bridge.
So this is normal to a Scientologist, this life.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My mom was in the Sea Org and I saw her. I would go to her room at like 11:30 midnight every night and see her. And this was when I was on the EPF, where you do all the training to become a Sea Org member. And then I was put in an organization which dealt with the servicing of the executives of Scientology, like David Miscavige, Mike Rinder, Guillaume Lesevre, all those guys. So when they came down, I would clean their rooms, do their laundry, wake them up in the morning, make their breakfast, do their dry cleaning. So I did that. Oh, and then when I was doing that, my mom decided to take off when I was 14. She took off from the Sea Org and left me behind. So I went to her room and I was waiting for her till 4 in the morning and she was gone again. So she left me in the Sea Org and didn't take me with her. Anyway, so after doing that for 4 years, serving the executives and stuff, my mum started speaking out about Scientology, and she went to France and she went on TV and talked about Scientology abuse. So then I became a threat in David Miscavige's eyes because I had been on his service line. So I knew things about him.
You knew things about him like what?
Well, I saw him like yelling at people, pushing people against the walls. It was cool to beat people up. Like that's what I learned from being around him. That reaction.
Yeah. Right. So you're speaking out, your mom's speaking out, and you're acting out because you're flowing to people, which is causing people to abuse you and commit crimes against you. And so what, they feel that you're a problem and they tell you, they ship you off somewhere?
Well, what happened is, first of all, when my mum spoke out, I got kicked out of this higher organization because I was a potential trouble source and no longer qualified
to be on these perfect people's lines. Right.
Yeah. Then that's actually when I worked with Valerie. And we were working crazy hours. We were getting like 4 hours sleep a night. The other thing is I was human trafficked to Florida and working directly for David Miscavige because I was 14. I didn't have legal papers at that time. My passports were taken and David Miscavige was directly part of that because I was working for him. So when I was 18, my mum came back to Florida from France and Switzerland, and I was put on 24-hour watch, so I had to be with someone at all times.
Why? Because they didn't want you near your mother, or?
They didn't want her to come and take me, and she had been seen driving where I lived, and she put a package in front of my door.
What did it say? What was the package?
It was a white sweater and a photo of my baby brother, Michael, and it said, and it had a note saying that she loved me.
Okay.
That was it. And I secretly kept it because I shouldn't have, like, that was wrong because she was like an evil,
right,
suppressive person.
Right.
So then I was in the dining room and this lady from OSA said, "Oh, you ready to go to the Free Winds?" And I was like, "What?" And she said, "Oh, David Miscavige has ordered that you go to the Free Winds." And I was like, "I don't want to go to the Free Winds." And I started crying because I didn't want to go. And she's like, "Oh, don't worry. It's only for a couple weeks. And we got to get you away because your mum is back now. And it's potentially could cause a public relations
nightmare.
They call it, for Scientology.
So now, Mike, were you on the lines at this point, knowing what Valeska's mother was doing, or?
I don't remember. What year is this, V?
95, 96. She put OT8 on the internet.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember what I was doing. I think I was on the decks at INT at that point.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. From an OSA perspective, why is Valeska now being... So Valeska's mother is speaking out against Scientology. She's putting confidential information of what the secrets of Scientology are on the internet. From your perspective, OSA, right? Office of Special Affairs, this is the whatever. You were the head of this department, Mike. What's happening internally?
This now becomes, Valeska becomes a potential attacker.
Okay.
By reason of her mother and her relationship with her mother and her mother coming to Florida after she's been going on TV in Switzerland and creating a big stink. It would appear that she was coming to collect Valeska.
And so, that's a problem. Why to OSA?
Because if she gets a hold of Valeska, just like Valeska just said, and she grabs Valeska and then starts going on TV with Valeska and she starts talking about David Miscavige. Oh my God, that's the disaster of the universe as far as the Office of Special Affairs is concerned.
And Scientology.
That is the worst thing. She can go on the internet and or on the media and do whatever she wants, but she didn't have any personal knowledge about David Miscavige, but Valeska did. Right. So Valeska becomes a huge potential PR flap.
And also,
and
Valeska,
that's why.
Yes, go ahead.
The handling for that is to get her to a location that is inaccessible to her mother.
And
her mother, the Free Winds, the Scientology ship that sails around in the Caribbean, is completely and utterly unbroachable. If you are not a crew member or on board the Free Winds for valid reasons, you can't get on there. Right. The only way you can get on and off a ship is one gangplank. There's only one gangplank onto the Free Winds, and you have to get into the dock. You have to get onto the boat. And they can just literally lift up the gangway and sail off somewhere else if there is a problem. But just so you know, Leah, that from the perspective of OSA, it's the David Miscavige stuff that would freak everybody out.
Right.
That other stuff is, in the minds of Scientologists, is sort of ho-hum routine. That's just what happens all day, every day, and big deal. Seriously, I know that it's not, but that is the mindset. The mindset of the Office of Special Affairs is protect David Miscavige at all costs.
Gotcha.
Beyond protect Scientology at all costs.
Got it. So
Valeska was a threat or a potential threat to that.
Got it.
And that's why she had to be gotten out of Florida, where her mother was.
Right.
And off to the Free Winds, where she could be hidden from her mother and the world. And Valeska is not the only person that has been sent to the Free Winds under those circumstances. Like, there are other people who have also been very problematic who have been sent to the Free Winds because of the security of its location. Like, Don Jason is another one.
Who was
a person also in Florida who was involved in the Lisa McPherson matter and other things and got shipped to the Free Winds. He eventually escaped by sliding down one of the ropes of the Free Winds. Marty Rathbun was sent to the Free Winds. Marty Rathbun was sent to the Free Winds after he had escaped from the Sea Org, and Miscavige sweet-talked him into coming back and sent him to the Free Winds under guard with Greg Wilhair, who we have heard about with Claire, and Ray Minoff, who were there for years to keep him under control and under wraps while the IRS was finalized. The negotiations with the IRS were finalized because he was such a big threat.
Right.
So Valeska going to the Free Winds is not a like completely out of the ordinary circumstance, although the situation with her mother and she hasn't mentioned it, but also her stepfather who committed suicide after being forced into bankruptcy by all of the regging that happened where he gave all of his money and more away to Scientology and became destitute and committed suicide. And that's what Valeska's mother was upset about and was talking to the Swiss authorities. And there was government investigations as well as media. This was like a big deal. So Valeska was one part of that bigger picture, and she had to be gotten out of the way and out of sight, out of mind as fast as possible.
And can I just ask you one question, Mike? What ever happened with those investigations with
nothing?
With Valeska? Nothing.
I mean, there was a civil lawsuit. There was, I think that maybe they there was a her. Settlement. What?
No, Scientology sued my mom.
Because she put confidential information on the internet and they, right.
And I just remember it was a sort of an endless mess, but it never really amounted to anything.
Right. Well, it's not about her getting nothing, really. It was more about why the authorities weren't doing anything about what Scientology was doing once again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so they told you at this point you needed to leave for a few weeks and you Right, but you ended up being held prisoner there for 12 years on this ship.
Yeah, almost 12 years. But yeah, so basically what happened is I was woken up 2 hours before my plane left. I couldn't even pack anything. I just had a little bag, and I was escorted to the Free Winds by a guy named Quentin. And as soon as I got there, it was Curacao. I was like, I don't want to be here. I met the captain and I said, when am I going back to flag? And so I was instantly in trouble. I was instantly getting yelled at. I was sent to the engine room until I had what they call a cognition, which is a realization. The fact that I was being this is going to be Scientology again, but I don't know how else to say I was being off purpose. I was putting myself before the group, and that is unacceptable. Selfish.
So you get forced into an engine room. You're just sitting there until you realize or have this realization that you're being a horrible person.
Yeah. Just so you know, when you arrive on the Free Winds, there's a big security guard at the gangway, and the first thing that happens is passport, green card, social security card, any legal papers, turn them over, and
they confiscate it. So you don't.
And how Don Jason was able to escape is he hid his driver's license, so he had a legal thing, but I had nothing. I also had no bank account. Like, I had no access to the outside world. I'd been in this my whole life.
And you had no phone. And you even if you did have a phone, who would you contact? It would never come to your brain to call 911. It would never come to your brain to call the authorities. It just wouldn't. It's just not an option.
No, that's evil. That would be so evil. And getting excommunicated in my mind was worse than getting shot, because it's your whole eternity, you know? And you've betrayed the only people that are going to save mankind. That was my mindset. But so, so I was there, and like at the beginning I was working in a restaurant, but I didn't want to be there. I made it clear I didn't want to be there. I kept on getting yelled at. And eventually the captain brought me up to his office, and the captain of the Free Winds loves to do this, where he brings you up to his office. He has a whole audience around him, and you get yelled at the top of his lungs for half an hour straight. And I was basically told that I was not getting off the Free Winds. And I was put on full-time engine room, decks, and then washing pots all day for about 6 to 8 months. I had a very good relationship with Shelley Miscavige. We used to write back and forth. And when I was in Florida, she was the only person who told me, you know, getting an education is actually really important. And that's my big regret, because I was on the Apollo at 12 and I stopped going to school. So she ordered me these mathematics books that she wanted me to study. And I had to, like, when I learned division, I had to tell her how, like, she would test me every time she saw me. So for me, she was like a mother figure. So when I was on the Freewinds, I wrote her and I said, I don't want to be on the Freewinds. I want to go back to Florida. I hate it here. And they read and open all your mail. So I got
in trouble for that.
Yeah, and they ripped the letter up. They said, we ripped the letter up. We're not going to send that to her. That's negativity.
Right.
Then on the Freewinds, you can't, everyone has a cruise card and you have a number, and your cruise card number has to be activated by security to be able to call off the ship, and all phone calls are monitored. And if you're in trouble, they deactivate it, so you can't make phone calls. You're always restricted to the ship if you're in trouble, so you can't go off the ship. But for me, for the first year, I was not allowed to go off the ship anyways, in case my mum came and took me. For the first 6 years, I was not allowed off the ship without an escort. So every time I went to the gangway, if you're in trouble, you go to the gangway and this big R comes up for restricted and it beeps really loud. So it's so embarrassing. So for 6 years, I had that every time I had to go ashore. And there was a little note saying either she's in trouble and she can't go ashore, or she's not in trouble, but she has to have an escort.
So during this time that you were on the ship, Valesco, what did you observe? I mean, were people being treated just as bad as they were being treated at St. Hill and Flag? I mean, was it a little better here? I mean, it sounds just as horrible. Worse.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, when I was a child, it was terrible because I was a child. But the Freewinds is so out of the way. It's such a small space. It's so controlled. I felt so trapped. And after 8 months of getting yelled at, having 15-minute meal breaks, not having any privileges at all, not able to like talk to anyone, even if I was listened to on the phone, you know, I at least I'd be able to like maybe talk to my dad or something, but I couldn't do any of that. And being basically brainwashed into, you are wrong for not wanting to be here, you are betraying the group, because in the Sea Org specifically, and I think as Scientologists too, but in the Sea Org, if you put yourself first, they call it first dynamic orientated, which means you're selfish, you're putting yourself before the group, and that's like, it's considered like disgusting, right?
So you were accused of that. So you were accused of being a selfish person because you.
Yeah. Okay. And then I had to put in play like the code of a Sea Org member, which includes you go wherever they send you in the line of duty.
Right.
So, and then after 6 to 8 months of that, I just resigned to like, well, I have to make the best of my life. Like, this is where I have to be. So I either have to be here or continue being in the engine room and washing pots for the rest of my life. So that's what I did. So it's never what I wanted, but it was, this is my life. I don't have a choice.
Right.
And then when David Miscavige came to the ship at Maiden Voyage, I saw him and he's like, oh, I forgot I had sent you here. Oh. So I was like, oh, I'm going to be here for the rest of my life now, because the only way I could ever get off is if he said, oh, she can leave the ship.
Right, right.
Valesca, you know, I also have spent a good deal of time on the Freewinds and, in fact, in the engine room. And you talk about it like, well, just in the engine room. And I don't think anybody really understands what you mean. That means literally scraping shit off the bottom of the engines in the engine room. That means doing hard, manual, dirty, filthy work all day long, because in the mind of Scientology, this is how you come out of your self-important or self-determined dynamic orientation.
Your selfishness.
You get out of it by doing hard work.
Yeah.
And it's really gross. And it's disgusting. And it's it's degrading and abusive. Debilitating and
claustrophobic.
Yeah. I mean, it's dangerous. Really pretty rough. It's
because you're not in hazmat and, because you're not in hazmat suits. Are you, or are you protective?
No. Okay. I used to, when I was sent to clean the bilges, when at the end of the night, I would take a bath in fuel oil.
Yes.
Fuel oil is the fuel that the ship runs on, that a diesel engine runs on. It's like gasoline.
Why would you do that?
Because the grease wouldn't come off any other way. Wow. Yeah. Like I was covered in grease head to toe. I mean, literally every square inch of my body was covered in black, grimy grit grease that sticks inside your pores. And if you don't wash, take a first long bath in fuel oil, you can't get it off with soap. So this was a daily routine of taking a bath in fuel oil when I worked in the bilges in the engine room. But Valeska, people say, oh, yes, but ultimately you were allowed off, so how can you say you were held prisoner on the free winds? And I, you know, this is something that I have written about on my blog fairly recently about the abuse or the mental brain or the brainwashing that goes on with people so that you believe that you're not able to escape. Or that escape will be worse than prison, et cetera, because
worse than death.
That's exactly right. Like you said, you'll lose your eternity because Scientology comes back and says, oh, Valeska, she's a liar. She went, you know, she was able to go ashore like after 8 years, but they kind of missed that point. And she even went on a plane and went to England and came back of her own free will. And I know they've said the same thing about me. You could have just walked off the property anytime you wanted. You could have left. And this, tell me what your mindset was after 8 years of being hammered and brainwashed and indoctrinated into these ideas of why you're at the free winds, what your mindset was about leaving.
Well, first of all, it was hammered into me from the age of 6, really. So I had that mentality. But my mindset was like, one of the things they say, is she worked in the restaurants and these police officers came on board and she could have said something. And I'm like, first of all, I didn't know who they were. Second of all, they were sitting with the captain or the port captain. And third of all, that wouldn't even cross my mind. That would have been so bad. I believed in Scientology. Right. And I would have sabotaged Scientology and put them in danger. Mm-hmm. It's a mental prison. It's chains that you can't see. Yeah. The other thing is, when you want to leave, you have to go through the gangway. And I saw people trying to rout out of the Sea Org, like leave. And it would take them a year of daily interrogations. And a lot of them just gave up and were like, whatever, I'm staying. Like, there's a mental prison, but it's also physically on the free winds. You can't just... And if I did get off onto the gangway, I had no legal papers. I had nothing.
But you also... you wouldn't need legal papers if you went to the authorities. It wouldn't matter. If you went to the authorities and said, you know, being abused as I have been since I'm 6 years old, blah, blah, you wouldn't have done that because it's a mental block. It's a prison of your own mind. So it makes sense. You're running away to where? Where are you going to? There's no, how do you get a hold of your mother? And even if you did get a hold of her, you still think she's the evil one. You
haven't been
separated from the brainwashing of it all to even think that she was an option yet. So it all makes sense to those who've lived through this kind of hell.
And just going back, Leah, to the book that you mentioned, this is exactly what that book talks about, the betrayal bond.
Yes,
exactly. It's exactly what this is all about.
Can I ask you guys a question? This inhumane treatment, like you're saying you're in shit, you're in toxic, you're taking baths in fuel. I mean, did you guys, I know the answer to this, but you guys went to the authorities. Let's just fast forward. You went to the authorities. The authorities know all of these stories, correct?
Yes.
I went to the FBI.
And the answer is what, Valeska?
So when I left in Sydney, I went to, I spoke to the, whatever the equivalent of the FBI is here. I went to Fair Works Ombudsman, whatever that's called. I spoke to the FBI for 4 hours straight, and it's all...
Just give me the bottom line. Give me the bottom line. What did the authorities say?
They seem to not give a shit. Like, they seem to be horrified by when you tell them, but it's like they're protected by religion. They, I don't know, they have billions of dollars, so... It's like walking to a brick wall, and it's like...
Mike, what's the answer to this? Yeah, exactly. But Mike, what can you add to that? That's true.
Well, and add to that, typically when someone goes and finally gets broken the chains of
years
the prison
later,
of belief...
Sometimes, sometimes 10, 20 years later. Yep, go ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah, go ahead. What do they say,
Mike? Usually after the statute of limitations has expired on whatever criminal act it was that was perpetrated against them, usually. And this is the problem that many law enforcement agencies have, is being able to have current victims, people who have current information. They freak out about, well, this is old, and what if they've changed? And, you know, it doesn't matter that you tell them, nothing ever changes in Scientology. Their idea is you've got to have current evidence. And current evidence is really tough to come by, because people are led to believe, just like I was, like Valeska was, like everybody that you've ever met who used to be in the Sea Org, that what went on was, it takes like years before you realize that there was anything wrong with it.
Right.
Like it other than you think that things were not good, you don't believe for a long time that the solution to any of it is to go to the FBI or law enforcement, who have been you've been indoctrinated into the idea that that is an evil act, that is a horrible, terrible thing to do, which will destroy your eternity. So,
and the other
other problem.
Yeah. And also I was going to say that because of all of you leaving in the way that you have, now even more restrictions have been put on to each base, right? The bases that could cause Dave Miscavige some trouble, right? Those areas where people are being held, like the executives that are being held in Riverside County at Golden Era Productions, or like you're saying, the Free Winds, right? Or where Shelley Miscavige supposedly is in Arrowhead. You know, now even now where you may have had people leaving those bases to go to a LensCrafters or to a Starbucks, they no longer allow that. When Valerie escaped, she escaped because they had actors coming on to this, you know, normal act, not Scientology actors, you know, civilian people coming onto the base. Well, they don't allow that anymore. They don't allow civilians to drive their cars onto the property anymore. So now it's going to be even harder. I mean, people literally have to jump off the ship. People literally have to jump over a fence in Golden Era Productions and hopes that there's a passerby is there to save them. I mean, they have to go to extremes, or they can simply do what they did in 1977 and conduct a raid. But Mike, even then, you're saying somebody like you or somebody like Valeska, if the authorities came onto the property, your first instinct would be to lie. Right?
Yes. It would be. Yeah. Oh. You would lie. Yeah. If they came to the engine room and saw me like under a deck plate, in a claustrophobic area cleaning, I'd be like, oh no, I want to be here. Like, even though inside I'd be like, help me get the hell out of here.
But you couldn't
say
that.
You would never say that. Yeah. The other thing I want to say is, like, Mike and me, where we were in from very young, you don't have the external education. I was not educated. I didn't know the laws. Even when I spoke to the FBI, they're like, you are human trafficked. I'm like, what? No, what? I didn't know. I didn't know it was wrong. It didn't cross my mind that what they were doing was wrong. All I thought is that I am selfish. I am wrong. I'm not pulling my weight.
Right. And so eventually in 2009, you had enough. You had met your husband, Chris, who you're still married to, and you had to get permission to marry him from the Free Winds.
No, I didn't. Yeah. I didn't have permission. I did it behind their back and got in big trouble for that.
But you should have had permission to get married, right? And so you and your husband, how did you eventually get out of the Sea Org?
Basically what happened is I did something very minor that they considered really bad. At that time, we were getting 3 hours of sleep a night because we were selling the stupid books that Miscavige had repackaged, the Hubbard books.
Mm-hmm.
And I did something that was really stupid, but that was considered bad. So I was, long story short, I was put escorted into this room by myself, put on 24-hour watch. There was a camera in front of my door. I had to be escorted to the engine room every morning by security. I had to eat my meals in the engine room for 15 minutes. I wasn't even allowed to eat in the control room because there was AC. I had to eat in the boiler room, and I had to work in the engine room all day. It was like probably about 20 hours a day. By myself. I wasn't allowed to work with anyone else. I wasn't allowed to talk to anyone. There was one incident where I got stuck under the plate because you have to go under pipes and stuff, and I got stuck and I couldn't move, so I started hyperventilating, and it took them about 45 minutes to an hour before an engineer found me. Like, I think I was having a breakdown. I was just uncontrollably crying and hyperventilating, and my legs were completely numb. I had to be carried out. I got yelled at for that because that was showing emotions, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then sent back down there, and then I ended up getting interrogated on the meter, and this went on for 3 months, and I got to a point where I actually wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to live anymore. Like, the whole thing of saving mankind didn't matter. And I feel that that's the breaking point for me where, and I don't know if this is real for Mike or not, where it gets so bad that you don't care anymore. You just want to save yourself. But so I didn't kill myself because I thought, well, the other person that did that, that was really bad public relations for the Free Winds and Scientology. And I didn't want to do that. And I thought, maybe I'll get out of here. And I did eventually get sent to the RPF in Australia. And after doing that for 11 months, I wrote a letter to David Miscavige saying that things were wrong, and that I wrote a list of things on the Free Winds that I thought was wrong. So I was considered to be to have bad thoughts about executives and Scientology and about
the So you reported everything to Dave Miscavige of what was going on, and they responded with, "You're bad again."
And I was going to get sent back to the RPF in Los Angeles.
Okay.
So then I was like, "No way."
And the RPF is like the prison camp, Mike, would you say, for bad Scientologists and for bad Sea Org members?
Yeah, the Thought Reform Program.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so they were going to send me back there to Los Angeles, and I had married Chris, and I said, no way, I want to leave. And I wanted to have kids anyway, so I secretly stopped taking the birth control pill and got pregnant, and I refused to have an abortion. So it took me
So they tried to get you to have an abortion? Is this normal? This is normal for the Sea Org?
Yeah, and I said, no, I'm not. Okay. And at that time, Mike and Marty were speaking out.
Yeah.
And I think the Headleys had a case, or they were speaking out, so they couldn't push it as hard as they used to.
Right.
Because of that.
Yeah.
I was sneaking off because in Australia, it's less, I could go to the library, so I snuck off there and I was reading things that Mike had written and that Marty had written.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew them, and they were never horrible to me. So I was like, how come all these executives that I respected and looked up to and were, like, decent to me are now these big, bad suppressives? It didn't make sense to me. And I knew what they were saying was true because I had experienced it.
Of course.
So I was pregnant. They didn't pay for any of my doctor's appointments, nothing. And I was sleeping like on the bed without a mattress, just like springs. And I started like bleeding, and I ended up losing the baby. I had to catch a train to go to the doctor's office. And long story short, I had a miscarriage, which was horrible. But I didn't tell them because I was like, I want to get out and this is my way out. So I ended up finally getting out in September of 2009.
And you remained a Scientologist, or where did you go? I mean,
So that was the most freeing moment in my entire life. I felt so free. And I went to Chris's mom's house and I started reading stuff right away. On the internet.
And like Chris's mom was a Scientologist or no?
No way. She's a Catholic and she hates Scientology, which was really helpful because I met normal people that were not Scientologists. And I was like, wow, these are nice people. They always make them sound like horrible, degraded people. And I was like, they're so much nicer than any serial member I know. So that was like a real awakening for me. I started reading stuff pretty immediately because I was never able to in the Sea Org, and it was never my choice to be a Scientologist. It was forced on me since birth.
Right.
So I started reading stuff, and then I went to Florida because my mum was there, and I met with Mike, who thought I was like a spy.
Oh, really?
Yes, he did. I met him at that fish place.
Yeah, Bonefish Grill.
Yeah. And then I also secretly started researching things about Hubbard, and I started realizing that
it was all a lie.
All that, yeah. And that he was like this pathetic psychopath.
Right.
Narcissistic, insane guy.
So you started rebuilding your life. You rebuilt your life. Yeah.
And then because I had worked around David Miscavige and so had Chris, Marion Powell was calling us every day to try and like she wanted Marion Powell. She's a woman that was on the Apollo, that was in the Sea Org from a very young age, and that always worked around David Miscavige when I was in the Sea Org. And she was one of the people that was assigned by David Miscavige to get these people that had left to not connect with Mike Rinder or Marty, and to keep them controlled and as good Scientologists and not to speak out.
Right.
But then I secretly went and saw my mum, and I was working with Tom DeVart, and I didn't know, but there was a girl working with me who I didn't find out until you did the Aftermath show, that she was a spy. And somehow my dad knew I was there. So 2 weeks before I gave birth to Declan, my dad disconnected from me. And that was the final straw for me. Like I was a pregnant woman, I was hormonal, and he sent me a text message disconnecting from me, and I was like, that's it. I went and sat down in my lunchtime and wrote my story and gave it to Marty Rathman.
And that was your official coming out and the end of this.
All I was trying to do is get my family back together. So I was talking to Marion, and I was trying to get my sister's declare and my mum's declare cancelled, and they were making it so difficult. They are so arrogant. All they had, my mum had.
Well, you didn't need their permission to be talking to your family, but you still did not realize that yet, right? Like that you didn't need any. You just were trying to leave the way Scientology wanted you to leave, but you couldn't do that. Eventually, you had to just kind of take the bull by the horns and go enough, and take your life back.
Yeah, it was just too much. They couldn't stop being abusive because it's Hubbard policy, and they have to follow his policy no matter what. They don't they don't have independent thought, and so they just continue their abuse, and it was just too much. And I was like, I have to do something about it. I can't just sit here and allow this abuse to continue, not only to me, but to other people.
Right.
Like,
right.
And and that's when I was like, I have to speak out, because if we don't all speak out and say what we've experienced, it's never going to change, because the authorities don't change it anyway. So unless everyone does something about it, it's not going to change. So I was like, I never had a family from the age of 6 anyway, so I'm going to lose my dad and my brother, but they were not in my life anyway. So
right. And today you have beautiful family.
Yeah. I had to get an education. I had to go get my GED, and then I had to, like, do basic things that people take for granted. I had to get a bank account. I had to get a driver's license. I had to,
you had to build your life.
So today I have 3 beautiful boys, and, they have lives which have nothing to do, with Scientology. Right? And they never will.
Yes.
Yeah. And,
So and you continue to speak out, and can't thank you enough for doing that and continuing to do the work.
Yeah. And I can't thank you enough as well. And Mike.
Well, we love
for
you.
For speaking out.
Thanks,
V. Oh, for speaking out. Yes. Well, that's always going to be.
And for being you.
Anyway, and Valeska. We cannot thank you enough for your time. I know you got to get your boys ready because they're getting up now. It's very early where you are.
Yeah, they're all like coming in my room, but
Well, we thank you, Valeska, and you're resilient and you're strong and you're all things that Scientology did not teach you. Thank you for being you.
Thank you for saying that.
Yes. All right. Until next time. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk next week. What do we say? You'll hear us next week.
Yeah, well, you'll hear from us next week.
Next week. Until then, thank you again, you guys. Bye.